Welcome to Day Zero Update for April 20th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, but we do have a pretty good amount of news here.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really huge here, but, you know.
Not particularly.
We know when we can finally start putting down a bunch of money on Nintendo Switch 2.
Yep.
Finally.
Mm-hmm.
We got, let's say an old classic commercial has been reborn in a new form. Mm-hmm. As well as some details on that Mario Kart World Direct that looks pretty good.
Yep.
We'll get to that stuff shortly, but I'll start here. Talk about what we've been playing. And I've been playing some Blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting in a decent amount of new runs here. As I'm trying to kind of get the, you know, a big part of this game, I would call, is very much an adventure game. Part of it is you're kind of laying out these rooms in an attempt to help you solve problems that you have.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really consider it a puzzle game, at least not the way that people have been referring to it as, because the puzzles aren't necessarily like puzzles. They're just
mm-hmm.
long-term adventure game, you know, quests that you are just hoping to be able to solve something with each run.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that doesn't happen. It's the luck of the draw. Sometimes it does, and that's real nice. But it's also a game that you kind of want to take your notes where you can. Mm-hmm. Whether it's physical notes or like I'm doing, just taking screenshots of every little bit of information that I find.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, all right, now I got stuff that I can reference for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, necessary for this kind of game because it throws a lot of information at you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's important to be able to go back to it and look at, okay, now I got this thing happening. Is this applicable here? You know, I found a couple of safes, and it's like, the annoying thing is that the safes aren't designed so that you know what number, how many numbers you need.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten like a number of codes, and I'm like, I don't know if this is a code for something, or is this just bullshit numbers on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you go and enter it, and it's like, no, these don't work. None of these numbers do. And it's like, well, this is frustrating. You know, there's a bit of that to it. I also kind of wish it just had a pretty basic note-taking features in it. Just let you kind of take screenshots and highlight that stuff there.
Mm.
Information. Make it a little more accessible versus having to either write it down in a notebook
mm-hmm.
that can get messy because of how you may not know how you want to organize it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just knowing what kind of what you're, where you got to fit these pieces in.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you kind of have a number of runs that are kind of just tough to see where you're going. But where I'm at, I've got ways of having some more permanent progression to it. Things like ways to change rooms and make them work a different way, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But it's tough to know, like, is this a worthwhile thing? I don't know if you get to change them even further because there's, you know, a few options for that stuff. And there's like one that's kind of seems pretty extreme mm-hmm. for it. It's like high risk, high reward kind of thing. And it's like, boy, if you're going to make this room kind of real annoying, I don't know that I want that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been fun to kind of go around. I'm learning more about the entire building here in interesting ways that you don't necessarily get, you know, right away, but mm-hmm. You do see a lot of interesting rooms that, let's say, they open up things in pretty interesting ways. So yeah, that's about as much as I want to say without just straight up spoiling things mm-hmm. about this game. But yeah, it's been pretty fun. Look forward mm-hmm. to put some more time into it. Let's see. Also been playing some No Man's Sky, with that most recent update that essentially adds paleontology to the game. I wanted to kind of get where from where I'm at to that and trying to see like how they put this in the game. And it's definitely a challenge, especially if you're like where I'm at, which is still kind of early part of the game, where you still got a lot of basic quests to do up front of reconnecting with the this mysterious messenger that you don't know much about, and all that. It's like, you know, whenever you start that game over again, it's like, oh yeah, these stupid Atlas passes, whatever the fuck they are, that aren't really easy things to get to right away. But then with how much they've added to the game, that also kind of adds a lot of extra shit you can do in interesting ways. But yeah, I've been kind of following that stuff and trying to figure out exactly what's going on here. And the challenging thing is it seems like that stuff is not necessarily confined to specific types of worlds, but it's a lot easier to get. You have to find, like, I think planets that are labeled as like ancient bones planets, like those would be plentiful on there. But they can't appear on other planets, but you have to basically have some luck of the draw when using your navigation data to chart new areas, or just happen to be nearby when the icon shows up for it. Or, you know, go up into the space station and you might be able to get a specific chart for that kind of thing. That kind of stuff. But I managed to find one archaeological dig site and got one set of bones, which was like a back wing bones kind of thing. And it's like, all right, this is one out of like the dozens that they seem to have in the game and the means for knowing exactly what to do with it is a little rough at the moment. You can trade them if you want. If you just get a bunch of dupes, I guess you can trade them with a new merchant that's in, you know, a bunch of places now. But that's very much that kind of barter system where you pick up the thing, you add what you want to trade for, and it tells you like if you know they're going to take it or not, that kind of thing. And it's pretty kind of weird, I guess. You can't just sell the bones for money if you don't care about it, I guess. And along the way with what I've been doing, I've run into just a bunch of weird shit that I can sell for money. That if I look up the wiki for it, it's like, yeah, this is all stuff you can use for crafting of other things. And it's like, I'm still pretty far from that, where I, you know, basically just now upgraded my multi-tool for the first time to a bigger one. I picked up a couple of ships, but they all have a bunch of broken shit on them that takes a lot of resources to fix up to be able to use them. So I've kind of added them to my collection, but not used them yet for that. And yeah, so kind of exploring around and doing some fun stuff and all that. So also been dealing with Sentinels a bit. Because, you know, you start getting missions from the space station for things you can do. And one of them that repeats is like kill a bunch of Sentinels, which these planets aren't full of Sentinels. They're not those kind of planets. So it's more like you have to find these specific areas, like factories or whatever they have that are specific ones they're guarding. And you have to like barge your way in and then start just blowing them up. And they still have that issue that they had from very early on in the game where they have no clue how to follow you into a building, even the one they're guarding. So you can easily get out of any sort of trouble with them by just going into the building and hanging out in there. They can kind of look inside, but not really. They don't really recognize you in there. So it's kind of like still got some of those fun hooks from the early days of the game. That's pretty pretty fun to still see us there. But yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing in No Man's Sky right now. Just still kind of farting around, but trying to get these bones, trying to, you know, get the upgrades and such for, you know, the multi-tool and my my exosuit and my my ship right now, which I also need to get money just to buy better ships with a lot more storage and all that. Eventually get up to the big, like, freighter stuff where I'll be able to house those ships at some point. I don't know if they're going to still require me to fix them up or not. I still haven't figured that out yet. But yeah, that's No Man's Sky. It's still trucking along. It's still a very cool game. I managed to get a trophy out of it somehow. Just because I think it still has all the same trophies that it did early on. So they're all based on doing a lot of the very basic things. There's nothing really super complicated there that it's asking you to do. It's just a lot of stuff about collecting lots of money, getting all a bunch of words, all that kind of stuff. So just happened to trigger one of those from the handful of hours I've been putting into it in the last week or so. So there's that. And then Power Wash Simulator is the other game I've been playing. Because in the run-up to Power Wash Simulator 2, they have two more DLCs they're putting out. These are free ones, part of the Muckingham Files, as they call them.
Yeah.
And they added the first one of those. Kind of the day of, which tells me that their sort of PR marketing for this game is not focused on the first game anymore. Because usually when they've announced, you know, DLC or any of this free stuff, it's been a few days in advance. But this one was the day of release. And but yeah, they added a new shop job. It's a dessert parlor. I think an ice cream shop. You can tell it's a game technically set in the UK because it's called a dessert parlor, not like an ice cream shop or anything here. It was fun cleaning it up. It's got some real nice art on the inside. The story here is that one of the employees working at the shop was taking out trash and noticed a raccoon there, forgot to shut the door. So the raccoon snuck in and caused all sorts of chaos. So there's dirt and various types of ice creams and other liquids spewing around the shop. So you have to clean it all up and all that. And you see a lot of nice art in this area. They have a nice little like trim on the walls, like it's a dripping ice cream going down the walls. And I think that's pretty good. There's some neon signs and some good like floor designs for that. So that's fun. Also, it's nice looking at the sign they have, and it's like, oh, there's no peanut butter here. That's how you can tell it's also not an American store, because we love our peanut butter and ice cream, chocolate peanut butter, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's nice little shop, and did not take too long, like maybe 45 minutes or so. So yeah, that's a fun one. So yeah, that's been pretty much it. So what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, fortunately now, because we'll be releasing this tomorrow after we finish recording this, I can finally talk about the secret game that I've been hinting at for a little while. But first, before I go to that, also, like Chris, I've also been playing Blueprints. And yeah, that game, I have come to realize, Chris says, that game does throw a lot of information at you. But all of that information is useful, and it all will eventually come into play, because the puzzles that this game offers are all layered. They all start off, you know, like the first puzzles you encounter in this game are pretty simple. They're like the three boxes, you know, one's, you know, two truth, you know, it's like a play on the whole two truths and a lie. In this case, it's two lies and a truth.
Well, it could go either way.
Or it can go either way. It's,
it tells you it's at least one truth, at least one lie.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's sort of like the like base level of the type of puzzle that you'll involve, that you'll get in this game, and you'll come across it several times. It's like one of the base level rooms that you can find in the blueprints to design, or whatever it is that it's called. But there are other ones as well. There's the dartboard in the billiards room, and you know, looking for the clues for that one in the billiards room itself. And later on, there are puzzles where you'll find like the solutions or hints for certain puzzles in rooms other than the room that the puzzle itself is in. You'll find out certain things in like the security room, where you'll find out like all the what the memos that you find, which ones are real and which ones are false. And then it'll get even to the point where it's like all of the, if you pay attention to every room you go into, you will notice that there are these, pictures that are everywhere, and all of those pictures eventually come into play as well. So it's a game that rewards both patience and rewards, you know, curiosity, because the game is constantly throwing new things at you the further in you go. Yeah, other than that, I can finally talk about the other game that I've been playing, which is The 100 Line Last Defense Academy. This is a game that was made by both the creator of the Danganronpa franchise, and is a collaboration with the creator of those various escape room games, you know, like Zero Escape.
Yeah.
And Infinity, you know, Never Seven, all nine, you know, 999, 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, all those games. And unlike all those games, though, it is essentially a strategy RPG. More or less. The basic baseline plot, which is, now that I've gotten really far into the game, is itself now in question, more or less, is you're playing the typical, you know, Japanese high schooler. This guy named Takumi Sumino, who's living an ordinary life in this place called I forget what it's called, but it's like called like the Tokyo City Settlement or something like that. Because, as the beginning, cutscene show, this is not the Tokyo that you know. This is a city that is covered by a dome and is lit up by artificial lighting and artificial weather. So this is a whole community of people who have been closed off from the world in this sort of isolated city. They know a bit about the world outside of it. They know a bit about the history of the world. But by this point, most people are just sort of okay with the fact that they don't really know, and they just sort of go on with their lives. And one of the other things you find out is that there's this thing that happens fairly regularly where this siren goes off and people immediately have to like run to shelter. But what then happens is as they're then trying to make their way to school, the whole place suddenly gets overrun with these really weird looking creatures that are like this weird sort of amalgamation of like a mascot character and weird slime people. It's really weird. And when he sees this woman, this girl that he's been hanging out with, named he's known since he was a child. She's been attacked and it looks like she's unconscious. And then he eventually falls unconscious, and when he wakes up, he suddenly finds himself in this place called the Last Defense Academy. There's a bit more to it. There's a bit more to it, but I don't want to give away everything. But it has to do with like how he gets his powers or whatever. And it is really hard to describe this game without giving so much away, because the thing about this game's writing and storytelling is that it is layers upon layers of twists and turns and reveals. that is just slowly, ever so slowly, peeled back and revealed the type of universe that you're living in. But essentially, it all ends up with you ending up at, again, Last Defense Academy, which is this sort of abandoned school building that's been taken over by this weird little mascot entity called C-Ray, who basically gives all of the, you know, not just Takumi, but all of his fellow people in the building this ability called Hemoanima, which is essentially a type of substance, a blood-like substance that intermingles with their blood, and every time they essentially release this Hemoanima, they then are able to take hold of any kind of weapons or whatever that basically suits them, depending on the character involved. So, like, Takumi, for example, is a fairly middle-of-the-road character because, you know, he's supposed to be the typical visual novel protagonist, so he gets a sword. There's another character who gets, like, an armored-up truck with, like, machine guns on it. There's another character who gets, like, a bunch of, like, butcher's knives and stuff. Stuff like that, really. And essentially what happens is they are given the job to be guarding the school and keeping it safe for 100 days. And then after that, humanity is supposedly saved and they can go free. But even in like the first go through, it quickly becomes apparent that there's more to it than that. One of the first big reveals that happens in this game is, well, I'm not going to spoil it, but you find out a bunch of stuff through those first 100 days. And that title, 100 line, actually has more than one meaning. It doesn't just mean the 100 days that you take to do this. It also is has a double or even triple meaning to it. When I started playing this game, I wondered why they decided to like do the embargo like so far out in advance to when they started sending out review codes for this game, because I had gotten up to like the 100th day and I was like, what's going on here? This game's almost over. Why did they do it just in advance? And then at the 11th hour, the game hits you with a curveball and you suddenly realize why they gave these out so far in advance. Because turns out there's a whole sort of time travel mechanic that comes into play. And that sort of turns the whole game story entirely on its head. It's amazing the twists and turns that this game will throw at you as you're playing it. But, as far as like the actual gameplay goes, there is essentially three portions of it, really. The first sort of the main portion of it is just sort of, I guess you could say, the visual novel aspect to it, which is where, you know, you're hanging out at the school, you're, you know, trying to interact with all the various people there, you know, doing stuff that if you've played Danganronpa, you kind of will be familiar with, you know, giving them gifts, hanging out, trying to find out, you know, what they like and they dislike, building bonds with them and becoming friends, that kind of thing. But then every so often, the school will get attacked by what C-Ray calls school invaders, which, again, are the previously mentioned weird mascot monsters. And that's when the actual fighting part of the game comes in. And, yeah, it is essentially a simulation RPG. Each character has their own abilities. They've each got their own specific attacks, their own weapons. And in order to, essentially you're given various tasks during these fights. They're generally pretty normal stuff. Like, oh, you know, like defeat all the enemies and make sure you survive without, you know, either all of you or all the other allies dying, or the field generator that's protecting the school suddenly, you know, is destroyed, that kind of thing. There are other things that will come up as the game goes on, but that's pretty much the two basic ones. The other, but while that's happening, there's a bunch of other stuff that's going on. One of the major things about this game is, because I talked about how every character has, you know, hemoanima as their sort of their weapon and everything. Well, that also comes into the fact that none of these characters can actually die, at least not on purpose. Because there's like a revival machine that will like pick up anyone who dies and then bring them back to life after the battle's over. And if it gets really dire, like a character can do like a last stand attack. That's like a super attack that can take out like a couple of enemies before they expire. And then there's also the ability to redo, which is where you can actually like sort of roll back time just a little bit, so you can go back one or two movements, so you can replan if you decide that it's not going the way you want. And of course, there's also like super attacks, more or less, and that's where like the power-up stuff comes into play, because every time you either attack an enemy or defend yourself or use any kind of action at all, depending on the effects, it'll build up the power that you have. And once you get over 100%, you can unleash a basically a super move that'll like, you know, inflict a bunch of damage on like a bunch of enemies, depending on, you know, what the attack is. But at the same time, you can also use it to like power up basic attacks. And if you can actually stack it so that it gets up to 300%, which will have effects not only on, you know, being allowing you to do multiple attacks, but super attacks, it'll also add what's called voltage, and it'll like increase the power of certain characters' attacks. Just like with these other types of simulation RPGs, you'll occasionally come across bosses. And in this case, the bosses are called basically called squad commanders. And when you first run into them, they are these weird sort of people who have like these odd costumes. They look like, you know, a villain out of like a tokusatsu show. They speak a language that you don't understand, but they look vaguely human. There's some stuff that happens down the line where, you know, sort of the story is sort of turned on its head again, all that stuff. But that's essentially how it goes. And then there's a third type that you can do during the day when you're not fighting, which is where you go outside of the school and sort of roam around the outside world to pick up materials and stuff like that. And that's when that is sort of turned into sort of like a board game type thing, where there's these spaces you're going on, and every like movement you're giving two cards with the number of spaces you can go, and you choose which one you want to go to. And depending on which type of space you land on, you'll, you know, be able where you can come across materials like cloth, you know, like, you know, textiles or metal or spare parts or herbs or fruits and plants, stuff like that. Or you'll get up into a battle where you'll have to fight a group of enemies. And then after that's over, you'll also get like a some kind of material as a reward. There's also like special spaces where you can get like special items that'll help you like manufacture like gifts for other characters that are like more special and brings you closer together, stuff like that. That's essentially what this game is, but there is so much I can't really talk about because just the nature of this game. There's just so many things that this game, you know, it's like you don't realize what this game is doing until, you know, you get close to that 100-day line the first time around, and then suddenly just the whole nature of the game changes. One more thing. I talked about, like, how, you know, nobody in this game can really die on without, you know, can die, you know, not unless on purpose. Well, that has to do with the nature of the hemoanima that they use. At some point, the enemies figured out that they could actually, well, you figure this out because it's one of the ways your characters make powers up. When you defeat a squad commander, you can then drain their Hino anima and add it to your own and use it to power up. Well, at some point, the enemies figure that out as well, and that ends up sort of playing into the game later on. That's about all I can really say as far as anything goes right now. I'm probably going to start writing my review probably early next week, probably Monday or Tuesday. But I will tell you, this game is incredible and fun and just incredibly entertaining, and it's also infuriating at the same time, because there are parts of it that can be repetitive, especially when some of the combat comes in concerns. There is a part later on the line where, like, the game will let you, like, skip a battle if you've done it one too many times, as far as the story is concerned. But yeah, it's just, it's honestly, it's definitely got the makings of being like a cult hit. I will also say this, as far as the writing is concerned, it is far better and far tighter than any of the Danganronpa games are. And that's, you know, that's coming from someone who likes Danganronpa in general. Anybody who's ever played Danganronpa can tell you, one of the biggest issues with that game is that they're constantly talking about the same thing over and over and over in a way that makes it's like, are they trying to like fill time or something like that? This game doesn't have that. You know, there is nothing like that. The closest you'll get to that is like flashbacks that you'll occasionally have. That's it. The writing is far breezier on this game than the older one, than, you know, any of the Danganronpa games is. And but anyway, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
First up here, we have new Game Pass stuff being added.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we'll go through the things that have already shown up here. There is GTA 5 available on console and PC, so you can check that out. Neon White added on Game Pass Standard.
Yeah, seriously, that's a good one.
Yeah. Let's see. SpongeBob SquarePants, the Patrick Star game.
Mm-hmm.
On all of the tiers, Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. Let's see. Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass, Crime Scene Cleaner for PC and the Xbox Series X and S.
Yeah, that's one.
A little bit of this that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, I've been told it's exactly what it says it is.
Yeah,
it's a crime scene cleaner. It's the simulator. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's all right. I can definitely tell it might be better with mouse and keyboard,
mm-hmm.
Versus a controller, because it's a little slow on the controls, and it's also kind of one of those games where you're. Mm-hmm. Running around a bunch in it, because it'll be like, oh, clean up this body and clean up the blood and all this. And your mop and sponge gets all bloody from that. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of keep running back and forth from the bucket you have full of water to clean it off.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that gets too bloody, and then you have to collect it, which then leaves a splotch of blood. Mm-hmm. And have to put the bucket back down to get clean water. I don't think I saw any way to just clean out the water. Yeah, it's all right. It's a busy work game. And it's decent enough for that. Let's see. Tempopo, console and PC. That is a like rhythm puzzle game, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one you can check out. Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for the stuff that's already out. Coming up here on the 24th. Which I believe is, yeah, Thursday. That's Claire Obscure Expedition 33.
Mm-hmm.
Or Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. So yeah, that's it's a neat looking game. Basically, turn-based RPG, kind of in the classic, like, Final Fantasy kind of way.
Oh, yeah.
But made by a European studio, I believe.
Yep.
So yeah, that looks neat. Let's see, on April 29th, that'll be next week, that is Towerborn in game preview, so it'll still be in early access on Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass, and so yeah, that is kind of a beat 'em up with some, I assume, some other stuff going on in it. Looks all right for what it is. Maybe it'll be better seeing it for myself. Let's see, April 30th, they're adding Far Cry 4 for Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't played that yet, or were in the middle of it the last time they took it off, it's back. So there you go. Then on May 1st, Anno 1800 for PC and Xbox Series X and S on a Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That's sort of a city builder RTS game. Let's see, May 1st also for console and PC, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, as they're slowly adding more Call of Duty games to the service. That's on Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. So that's the second part of the remake trilogy for that. And the last one here for May 6th, Dredge for PC and Xbox Series X and S, for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass and Game Pass Standard. That's a very good game. That was one of my top games the year it came out. Very fun fishing adventure game with kind of a sinister element to it, as you're dealing with say a bunch of Cthulhu type stuff kind of happening around the edges of the game. So there you go. Some pretty solid stuff. For the next couple weeks.
Yeah, definitely got some good stuff here. I am interested to see like what the response is going to be to like Clair Obscur, because I've been hearing like so many things about that game, to see like, you know, how that game plays out and what people think about it.
Yeah. So there you go. That's some items to keep an eye on. We do have another one here, a demo that is out now for Unbeatable. This is a rhythm adventure game. I believe it had a Kickstarter a year or two ago. They have a demo out now for PC and PS5, so you can check that out. Has a really nice look to it and all that, so I'll definitely be checking that one out. See how that one goes. But yeah, if you like your interesting rhythm games, this one looks like one of those. So yeah, there you go. Let's see, what else do we have here? Oh yeah, we finally got word on when people can pay for pre-orders for the Nintendo Switch 2. And that'll be on April 24th, this week on Thursday. Price of the consoles, the console editions that they have here are staying the same. So you can get the base Switch for $449.99 and the Mario Kart World Bundle for $499.99. And yeah, the games are staying the same prices. So Mario Kart World for $80, Donkey Kong Bonanza for $70. But a lot of the accessories are changing prices, getting a little more expensive. The Pro Controller is going to be $85 instead of $80. I believe the Joy-Con pair went up $5, so it'll be $95 for a pair of new Joy-Con 2s versus $90. The charging grip is now $40 instead of $35. The Joy-Con strap is $14 instead of $13. The wheel set for Mario Kart World is now $25 instead of $20. The Switch 2 camera is now $55 instead of $50. The Switch 2 dock set is $120 now instead of $110. The carrying case and screen protector are $39.99 instead of $35. The all-in-one carrying case is now $85 instead of $80. And the Switch Switch 2 AC adapter is now $35 instead of $30. So yeah, a bunch of those going up. I think I also saw the the amiibos that they announced, the Street Fighter and the Zelda ones, are all going up by $10 each. So I assume that must mean those were made in China. Because yeah, the Street Fighter ones were $30 before, now are going to be $40 each.
Yep.
And these Zelda ones were $20 each, and now are going to be $30 each.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very much skip on those.
Yeah. But, fortunately, the good thing, I guess the good part at least is that, the actual price of the system and the bundle itself isn't increasing, apparently. I guess Nintendo is of the opinion that the tariffs are not significant enough that they need to specifically tack them onto the systems. The accessories, though, apparently is where they're expecting to make up for it, I suppose.
Yeah. Definitely seems like at the moment where the tariffs are at right now, which could change at any point, but they seem confident that they can at least get these pre-orders through and deal with the price of the console later when, say, the pause that Trump has going on ends or changes or whatever. We'll see, but yeah, I'm hoping to get a pre-order in here on Thursday. Can I get that locked in at least for June 5th? And gonna skip all the accessories because screw paying those prices.
Yeah, seriously.
Because that's $80 for the Pro Controller is already expensive, much less $85.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm trying to avoid spending too much money on this, so I'm gonna just take a pause on that for a bit. See how things go. So there you go.
Yep. Could have been worse, I suppose.
Yeah. Nintendo could have just taken the pre-orders when they were originally going to, considering that the pause and all that happens. But all that was just pure chaos in a way that everybody kind of expected.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's I think it's made any company dealing with international shipping and all that to be a real fun time. I saw like Bandai Namco's pausing pre-orders for like Gunpla stuff because they can't really bank on any of that stuff shipping out times when Trump's not going into stupid mode on tariffs. That they would take a bloodbath on those pre-orders and such. And that's going to happen for everything. Anybody that has any of their supplies or whatnots around the world or outside of the country they're currently in is going to have to deal with that as like a constant concern and nightmare. And that's why it seems like Nintendo is very much trying to move as much product as they can into the U.S. before the tariffs maybe go back up or whatever. So
yeah.
Yeah. Be a fun time.
Yeah.
Run any kind of business, big or small.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. We do have some things that are going to be happening this week. World of Goo 2 is getting a bit of a surprise release on April 25th, the same time as the Steam release.
Yep.
So people will be able to check that out if they've waited a bit. That's great. I've been looking forward to this game. I don't know if I'll grab it right now. But I'm glad to see it's on more platforms and more people can check it out. So yeah, that's a cool looking game.
Yeah. Definitely looks fun.
Yeah. Let's see. On May 1st, we got Shotgun Cop Man coming out. This is one of Devolver Digital's new games. With the dumbest name possible, and I don't say that as a negative. It's the same studio that did My Friend Pedro. It seems like taking a similar kind of path to this kind of game. It's like a side-scrolling precision platformer shooter game of sorts, though instead of having a big dumb man in a banana suit, this is just a very wide man with a shotgun and pistol, I guess. Unless taking shots at enemies as they're jumping around and doing all this ridiculous stuff. So yeah, that'll be out May 1st for Switch and PC for $10. So seems like a pretty decent price for that game. Honestly, there, if you need a game to take your mind off of other things that are going on, that might be one for you. So yeah, there you go.
All right.
Also coming out in May, we got Palia for PS5 and Xbox Series X and S.
Oh, yeah.
It's been out on Switch and PC for a bit. This is essentially kind of a fantasy life sim MMO-ish kind of game.
Yep.
It's a little bit of the PC beta back in the day. And I was like, yep, this certainly seems like what that is. Also, it's very early, so it's very rough and runs not so great on my PC. So I was like, I'll just wait for either it to be finished or... you know, for a console release, and Switch wasn't necessarily where I wanted to play it, but coming to PS5, it seems to be coming out coming alongside a big update called Eldwood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's called, or Elderwood. I'm assuming that's adding a bunch of new stuff to collect, more huntable creatures, a bunch of other stuff too. Use for your house and whatnot, so
yep,
yeah, some new stuff to do, so that'll be fun. May 13th for PS5 and Xbox Series X and S there, or Palia, so there you go.
All right, yeah, looks entertaining.
Yeah, got that kind of chill vibe to it that it's nice to have these days.
Yeah,
with everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was also a Playdate showcase that happened this past week, where Panic talked about the new season 2 and gave details on that. It'll be starting May 29th, with 12 new games that'll be releasing 2 games a week for 6 weeks.
Yep.
So May 29th, July 3rd, that'll be $39 for the season, which seems like a lot of money, but it's also 12 games. That's pretty decent price for that. But yeah, they got some neat studios working on this. There's one called Fulcrum Defender, which is a Neelogan game. It's from Subset Games, the makers of Into the Breach and FTL. So they're making a fun little side game for this season 2. There's one called Daria and Como, a physics-based puzzle platformer, from Pop Seed Studio Inc. and Juvie Productions, which is Viola Davis's production company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of neat to have her involved in a game like this, and when it's on Playdate, so that's cool. Let's see, there's another one called Shadowgate PD. It's essentially a Playdate's remake of Shadowgate, that classic kind of first person adventure game kind of thing, whatever that was. That's a neat looking thing. So yeah, that's cool. They remade that for the Playdate and it looks pretty neat. And then one called Dig Dig Dino, from Dom2D and Fayer, which is a game about digging up dinos, dino skeletons and such. And that looks like a fun little puzzle game. They do have a section on the website showing off more of these games that you can check out. Or not showing them up, but letting you see at least the titles for them. And some of the devs have been talking about their being a part of the new season and all that. So that's cool.
Yep.
But yeah, looking forward to this. I'll probably grab this. That's the thing I've been... looking forward to having some more games on there. Yeah, there's a bunch of these at the page right now. Yeah, they don't have anything to look at other than the title pages, but some of these devs are ones that have made other games for Playdate, so that's cool. I believe they also announced recently that they have paid out over $1 million to Playdate devs for the ones that sell their games on the game store.
Yeah.
Which is a nice chunk of change for the few hundred games that are on there.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, that's it's great to see.
Mm-hmm.
For that nice little indie handheld that's doing a lot of cool stuff.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go. That's a fun thing. You have not checked out the play dates. Unfortunately, you missed the means for getting it cheaper because it.
Yep.
They moved their warehouse or changed factories. And then everything got more expensive to make. So they ended up having to raise the price for that. They do have, I think they still have some refurbished models you can get for a bit cheaper, but I don't know how much more of those they still have. But
right.
Yeah. That's one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, speaking of the Switch 2, you remember back in the day, when Paul Rudd looked almost the same. He was in a Super Nintendo commercial that of him like standing out in this like drive-through theater parking lot that's disheveled in a way that you're like, yeah, that's how those would be these days. he's playing the Super Nintendo on a big screen and all that, and it's a pretty well-known commercial for the day. And all that, and well, he returned to do a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
That's called Now You're Playing Together.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's kind of in a group chat with friends, one of which is Joe Lutrugio. You've seen a lot of comedy stuff, especially Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Mm-hmm.
He's Charles in that. They're kind of having fun, screwing around, playing Mario Karts, and Paul Rudd's dressed exactly the same as in the original commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So finally starting to show his age at this point, because considering the way that they're showing this. But yeah, it's a fun commercial. And Nintendo, I guess, as part of this, uploaded the original commercial to their YouTube so people can actually check it out there. So that's fun when Nintendo acknowledges its history and actually makes it accessible. Because plenty of times they don't. So yeah, there you go. Fun little commercial for that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, we had the Mario Kart World Direct. Lasts about 15-16 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of answered some questions we had about what's going on in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is an open world racing game. You can go into like a free drive around the map, and they'll have little missions. They're not necessarily done like an open world game, as far as like, you know, having icons on a map or anything to go around and find easily. They seem to build it more with a lot of like little challenge stuff to do. I'm trying to see where they might mention this specifically. But yeah, there's like piece switches they've built into the world. They have extra challenges and all that kind of stuff to it.
Yeah,
hidden coins, hit P switches, take on hundreds of missions that can help improve your driving skills.
Yep.
Outside of races, you can also do your in-game photos in a photo mode with a lot of options for, you know, getting that to look the way that you want. And the two main modes they've been talking about for the racing, which is Grand Prix, which is the classic style, you know, racing for points and all that kind of stuff. But instead of just them being separate races, you have to drive to the next race kind of thing. That's a neat little twist there. Then there's Knockout Tour, which is, you know, your standard elimination mode in a racing game where the people at the end of the pack get cut off at a certain point for that. So the only the people in the front get to keep racing until there's one winner at the end. Pretty classic. They also do have a battle mode that I think is just in the open world, but similar to what you remember from those classic modes. You have the balloons you're trying to keep away from getting burst by other players and all that. So that looks neat. There's also a version of it called Coin Runners, where you're just collecting coins and your attacks on them with items and all that causes their coins to drop out. So doing all that. And trying to see what else. They have a bunch of new courses and some classic ones reimagined to work in this game. And they also hinted at Rainbow Road being in there, as you would expect. At some point, showed off a little bit of some of the new characters, like the Goomba is now in the game. Spike is in there, and even a cow. That's kind of the part that I'm not really a huge fan of for this. It's like, put more of the Nintendo characters. That was the cool thing about 8, and that would have been great to have at least some of those characters in there. But I'm sure they'll sell that stuff at some point. It seems very much like what this game is going to be as a launch title. It's going to have expansions over time.
Oh, yeah. Packs
of courses and characters and all that. It was at least nice to see like that, the weird little power-ups that like changed Mario or Luigi's outfits when you're racing. That those unlock those for future races that you can just use from the start.
Yep.
So that's at least nice.
Yeah.
Make that cosmetic stuff work a little bit more
easily.
Yeah. I think it's about it. You can set up your own races for playing with friends. Maybe as a general multiplayer thing, you can have split everybody up into teams, all that kind of stuff. And it has all the same kind of roadside assistance stuff that the Switch version of 8 had. So it makes it a little easier for kids to have auto acceleration and sort of bumpers on the sides of the course to keep them from falling off the course all the time, that kind of stuff. So there's a bunch of stuff like that in there. So that's nice. Because kids are going to want to play it, and they suck at these games. They got to help them at least do better.
Yeah.
Until they get better.
Yeah.
And get good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
This game is going to sell like crazy.
Yeah. Maybe not as much as $80 as it could have been at 60 or 70, but it'll do fine. All it does is essentially make the more money conscious people to go for the bundle. We can save $30 there. Fall right in Nintendo's trap, because then you feel like you save $30 and you got to spend that money elsewhere. And they still get that $30. So, yeah, this game seems like it's going to be pretty fun. I don't know if you have anything else to add or anything else you'd like to see in there.
No, other than the fact that this game looks great. I know what I want for Christmas this year. And holy crap, is this game going to... even with the $80 price tag, this game is going to sell like crazy.
And just tell them to get it in now. Get the order in now.
And just
find some way to stash it for 6 months. Because certainly not going to get cheaper. But yeah, there you go. Let's see, what else we got here? Yeah, with Star Wars Celebration happening in Japan, EA announced the new game for the franchise, Star Wars Zero Company, coming from Respawn and Bitreactor. Bitreactor, I believe, makes a number of strategy games and such, and so that makes sense for this. Yeah, it'll be out next year, I think. I don't think they give a date or anything. But it'll be on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. It's essentially a turn-based strategy game, I believe, set in the prequel trilogy. But you are sort of a ragtag team of mercenaries and bounty hunters and such. Going around and fighting people, often droids, but I assume some other stuff going on there as well. But it looks really neat. Here to see some more of this. It's nice to see something other than a shooter or a Souls-like out of EA for this franchise. So yeah, that looks neat.
Yeah. Yeah, actually does look pretty interesting. And Respawn getting to do another Star Wars game. Yeah, honestly, I'll say it again. The reason the Star Wars game curse, why Respawn was able to break the Star Wars game curse, was because EA basically kept their hands off and let them make the game.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't, you know, they didn't try to do what they did with Battlefield and just stick so many fingers in it that it basically It got so bad that the CEO of Disney actually had to call the board of directors and have a talk with them.
Yep. Yeah, so there you go. That'll be out next year at some point. I don't know if we have any idea early or late, but it'll happen at some point. So there you go. Yeah, and then probably the biggest negative news of the week is that Sony announced a price increase on the PS5 throughout Europe and basically other Europe territories. Europe, UK, Australia, New Zealand. It's the digital edition that's increasing. I believe the disc edition is staying the same and the Pro is staying the same. Yeah, it seems like in Europe, going up from €400 to €500. In the UK, it's £360 to £430. Australia's $600 to $750. And New Zealand's $650 to $860. Yeah, this is what Sony called a challenging economic environment, including high inflation and fluctuating exchange rates, which is not a huge surprise there, especially as, you know, tariffs are doing their damage to the global economy. But yeah, the U.S. has been spared from this. I guess the Australia and New Zealand have increases for the standard editions as well. The disc edition, Australia's $750 to $830, and New Zealand's $820 to $950. Okay, so that makes some sense there. Yeah, a lot of money. Fortunately, like nothing that's been going on has made any of these consoles really all that cheaper to make.
Nope.
On any end, the components aren't really getting that cheaper. They're maybe just getting replaced by slightly different components at the same price, but getting them around the world also costs a lot of money at this point, especially with tariffs and all that. And here in the U.S. kind of surviving this one, but for the moment, because tariffs are just, we got a pause on it. So for now, we're okay.
Well, the thing is, the real economic effects of it haven't really hit us yet.
Yeah,
they will.
Microsoft and Sony kind of already have a bunch of their consoles here for now. So they've been kind of able to just ride that wave for now. But once they, you know, have to start bringing more in, that'll be where the stuff goes off the deep end as Trump decides to implement his tariffs again. Doesn't seem like he's cooled off on them either. So, yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's they also increased PlayStation Plus prices in many countries, even outside of those ones that got their PS5 increased. Canada got their prices raised from $95 to $110 for Essential for 12 months, for 12-month subscription, $155 to $190 for an extra 12-month subscription, and $190 to $225 for a premium 12-month subscription. Which is a lot. I think the monthly is staying the same. But yeah, that's also changing in a number of places for Latin American countries, Southeast Asian nations, South Korea and Australia, and a bunch of others as well. Seeing prices rise and just more of that kind of international. Doing all this stuff across all these countries eventually just causes a lot of problems as you get exchange rates changing and all that, and costs and all that. So, yeah, not really surprised by this. Every service seems to be getting increases here every so often. But, yeah, rough time for people in those areas. So, yeah, there you go. And let's see, let's end on some good news. Dwarf Fortress has reached 1 million copies sold on Steam.
Yes, it has.
The game that's been in the works for nearly 20 years finally got a Steam release that has done very well for them. The very few people that work on that game essentially are probably good for life on the money they made there, which is great. 'Cause, it's a very unique game in this industry, a game that was made, you know, in the early 2000s, found a nice little audience. It was a very kind of classic style roguelites, rogue style game of, or was ASCII art in the original version that people eventually made, or the devs might have made a graphical conversion that was pretty nice. But then, you know, as of a few years ago, they were working on a Steam version, kind of own it into something that's a little more, at least approachable for the average player. And it's done pretty well for them, which is great to see. Devs kind of get rewarded for sticking with this kind of game. As they just continue to add new things to it.
Yep.
Make it just one of those games that it's fun to look at the change logs for it. Because it's all the weirdest situations that it addresses. Like, I'll click on the most recent one. Stop dwarves from using forbidden and uncompleted coffins for burial.
Yeah.
Stopped unretired forts from being marked as capitals. Stop mining, woodcutting, and hunting from being able to be assigned to the same dwarf. Stop grayed out. Everybody does this for mining, hunting, chopping labors from being pressable. So, yeah. A bunch of those kind of fun little things that you're like, okay, this game's got weird stuff going on. I probably should check this out. I bought it a while ago and I still haven't started it up yet because it's still a daunting game to jump into.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, now I gotta learn like a second language to realize how to play this game and how it works.
Yeah, because like the whole thing is like, if I remember correctly, isn't the whole game like in, like you said, yeah, you basically do have to know like a whole second language because the entire game is done in like code.
Kind of.
It's all done in like it's all done in like ASC2 characters.
The original game was.
Well, the original version.
You can probably turn that on, I assume, but
yeah,
this one has more normalish graphics, but it's also managing a lot because like when you start a new save, it generates a history for this world. You can kind of stop it at any point to just start playing.
Yeah.
Or you can kind of let it develop like thousands of years of history for how things get to this point.
Yep.
So yeah, it's one of those games that's very daunting because it's like, okay, I got to figure out how to manage, you know, this group of dwarfs and make sure this town doesn't fall apart and all these awful things happens, which... generally will happen as you learn the game, but yeah, it's just one of those entertaining kind of games, so yeah.
Oh yeah. Alright.
Yep. Good to see some success for a developer like this, so there you go.
Yeah, for an indie developer, and like, the game is completely free.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just download it anytime. The whole thing is funded through like donations.
Yeah, but if you want to play it on Steam, you gotta pay like $25, something like that.
Well, yeah, obviously.
There is a freeware version, I think, still.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just double check that real quick here. Yeah, you can go back to their, let's see.
The OG ASC2 version.
Yeah. Yeah, there's classic War Fortress here.
Mm-hmm.
But they still seem to update, so that's cool. But yeah, it is ASCII Arts, a lot of just random symbols and such. So, yeah, fun times. You can still check that one out if you want. If you want all the fancy stuff in it and be able to not just see letters and characters and such all over the place.
Yeah.
Steam's the place to go. Especially, I assume the Steam version has plenty of guides that are helping you get into it. I'm sure a lot of jokey stuff, too. But... the guides will help out a lot. There's like dozens in all these categories. So yeah, 146 guides total.
Yeah.
That's good. So yeah, I think that's where we're going to end it. So yeah, thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
As we survived this 420 Easter.
Yep.
So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Let's see what else we got coming out this week. here. Yeah, Clair Obscur, Expedition 33. Oh, yeah, Fatal Fury, City of the Wolves is out. Days Gone Remastered will also be out this week. So, yeah, some stuff will be out this week. So, yeah. But yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. Check it out. And select strangers who are also happy that Dwarf Fortress is doing well. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.